Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never. And as a matter of fact, we've got Tammy with us, and so Tammy is going to be jumping in here, but let me get through the quick obligatories. That debt is fraud. In our appeals to heaven, we need to continually learn, pray, and act. And we need to be very focused on demanding full compliance of the Constitution using Section 3 by holding our public servants, whoever they are, we need to hold them accountable to the law. And by using the law, it's actually very important. I'm going to repeat this probably for a few times. The fact of the matter is, the law, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, is clearly a part of the Constitution, being a part of the supreme law of the land. Section 3 is clear enough. There is no call for a trial process, you know, that the body has to hear when somebody has actually violated their oath of office by failing to do something that is blatant, like repelling invaders. Governors, sanctuary cities, anybody that claims sanctuary over somebody that is here that is not a citizen, did not go through the immigration process, we got to stop qualifying them as immigrants. They are invaders. And anybody that says we're not going to repel invaders, then you remove them. It's that fast, that quick. We need the Department of Justice. There's no reason why Congress, I've got to say this now. There is no reason, because I said this Friday, there is no reason why the Department of Justice can't take, because it's clear enough in the law, in the Constitution, what they wrote is clear enough. There is no due process. Therefore, if they can actually and substantially say, by voting this way, because clear, it's just like the digital currency. Any state that has legalized the digital currency, they need to be held accountable. But when Trump, he actually is deeming this as an emergency, he can actually go after anybody regarding the invasion. He can go down the path, down the road. And actually, if you think about it, Trump would be pretty busy for the rest of his presidency removing the corruption from our public offices at the state level, even the county levels if necessary, because there are some big counties, you know, Minneapolis, L.A., and so forth, that is just reeked. I mean, it's just terrible. Just corruption abounding. Wherever there's money, there's going to be corruption. So, and there's lots of corruption in Wyoming because there's lots of money. Isn't that true?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just kidding. Yes. I'm kidding because, you know, there may be people that do have money, but it's not like, you know, the L.A., New York, I mean, you know, they may be like these little islands, but there's not like Bel Air, you know, where Jackson Hole is kind of one of those spots. And they do have those little problems of affluence in those little touristy, you know, winter, summer vacation homes. Right. So Anyway, but I mean, there is money there. There are a few people, but it's not the same because when you look at how much money is involved in the state legislature, the House of Representatives, go look at the campaign financing for every legislature in the last 2024 election for the House. Look how much money was given to each candidate, and you'll notice that, shoot, it's down in $1,000 or something like that. You know what a state legislature in California spends? Or your contributions and so forth, you know what they bring in? They're in the hundreds of thousands, and some of them are in the millions. So,
wow.
Yeah, that's what I mean by when there's money in it. It's, you know, that's when people are actually willing to pay to own their own public servants. Because the concept is, and this is why the Supreme Court rewrote the Constitution to basically allow money to be speech. And to me, they completely perverted the whole process. Bottom line, no person that has no
dog in the fight. In other words, they have no skin in the game. In other words, they don't live within the election area. No person should be able to even speak. It's one thing to speak their opinion, but to use money in leveraging in that election is absolutely election. To me, it's election tampering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
That's election tampering. It's the same thing as if Trump goes around and says, I want you to vote for this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy. He shouldn't be doing that. We should not have governors or presidents or anybody, you know, if they don't live in that area, nix on what they say. You know, it's one thing to, this is how we bypass it. The only way you can actually say something is regarding, you know, something that is applied to all on an even scale. In other words, let's say we have constitutional tests for every election race. Wow, that'd be great, because then the people that support the Constitution could, because this is where you can actually speak about the election around the nation regarding the Constitution, is basically saying, hey, look, this person scored really well. I'd vote for him. I would vote for whoever scored the highest on their constitutional test. That's who I'd vote for. Because those mm-hmm. people should know and understand, and you should be able to hold them accountable a lot easier. The worst thing that you can deal with is a politician that actually falsely affirmed, because they should never have gone into office, that they don't understand the Constitution, which means that they falsely affirmed. Which means when they say, well, I don't know the Constitution, they literally just ratted themselves out. They could have actually not said anything to, what is that, what's that Fifth Amendment? I choose not to say anything to, you know, so that I could protect myself for immunity or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, I mean, as soon as they say, well, yeah, I don't understand the Constitution, they basically just outed themselves that they, hey, I committed a crime. I falsely affirmed to support the Constitution, even though I didn't know what I was doing. Anyway, so my point is, and then we can get into the ratification debates. My point is this, is that the Department of Justice can easily look at Section 3 of the 14th Amendment and go, we don't need Congress to tell us what we have to do this. All we have to do is basically say, everybody that has called and declared a sanctuary city for people who are here that are not immigrants, in other words, they're not in the immigration process. And what the court processing to say they're going to process them? No, the law is, and because they're violating the law is clear. You have to initiate the process before you come here. That's the law. They may have changed and basically accommodated, and that's all they're doing is creating accommodations. And the courts have basically been the ones that have been rewriting the laws. And they can't do that either. And so that's the other thing. So the two things that Trump can focus on is the invasion and the courts rewriting of laws. Clearly, if a court redefines what a citizen is, oh, well, as long as they're here, the anchor baby citizen, that whoever supports the anchor baby in the court system, they are violating, they're basically running an insurrection against the Constitution, and they get removed. So in other words, on those two issues, the Department of Justice could actually put their travel pants on, get their pack on their back, and start going around the country, removing justices and public servants who are supporting sanctuary, keeping, you know, invaders here, what have you. It's this easy. They don't need Congress to create the law. There you go. There you go, because it's already in the Constitution. That is the law. All right, let's find out where we are. We're still in the North Carolina debates. And the Bill of Rights enumerating powers, which is basically Mr. Archibald McLean, is making some assertions. We just went through his assertions that were kind of all related to the jurisdiction of the judiciary that started with Mr. Spate. He kind of jumped in and he kind of just basically said, okay, and so that's where we just finished, was his comments regarding the judiciary. But this one right here is where he starts now talking about the enumerated powers and the Bill of Rights. Do we need a Bill of Rights, or do we only need to enumerate the powers? There you go. So go ahead.
Okay. The gentleman has wandered out of his way to tell us what has so often been said out of doors, that there is no declaration of rights, that consequently all our rights are taken away. It would be very extraordinary to have a Bill of Rights, because the powers of Congress are expressly defined, and the very definition of them is valid and efficacious, a check as a Bill of Rights could be, without the dangerous implication of a Bill of Rights. The powers of Congress are limited and enumerated. We say we have given them those powers, but we do not say we have given them more. We retain all those rights which we have not given away to the general government.
Okay, keep going.
The gentleman is a professional man. If a gentleman had made his last will and testament and devised or bequeathed to a particular person the sixth part of his property or any particular specific legacy, could it be said that that person should have the whole estate? If they could assume powers not enumerated, there was no occasion for enumerating any powers. The gentleman is learned. Without recurring to his learning, he may only appeal to his common sense. It will inform him that if we had all power before and give away but a part, we still retain the rest. It is as plain a thing as possibly can be that Congress can have no power but what we expressly give them. There is an express clause which, however disingenuously it has been perverted from its true meaning, clearly demonstrates that they are confined to those powers which are given them. This clause enables them to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States or any department or officers thereof.
Okay.
This clause... Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I realized that I was muted when I was going to say something on the red text. And I'm trying not to, folks, I'm really trying not to go through the rat holes. But clearly, I've said that the Constitution is like a power of attorney. In other words, it delegates very specifically, you know, what to be done and so forth. In this particular case, he actually used an example of a state law, right? He goes, if a gentleman had made his last will and testament and devised or bequeathed to a particular person the sixth part of his property or any particular specific legacy, could it be said that that person should have the whole estate? He's creating this context that this is just like a power of attorney. When you're delegating something specific, that's all they can do. If you delegate general powers... This is what these people don't understand. This was new. You know, we're creating a government. You mean they don't have general powers? What? They obviously, because they kept on saying Bill of Rights, Bill of Rights, Bill of Rights. Right? They kept on, the anti-federalists did not shut up. We have to have a Bill of Rights. But it does not stand. It only stands to have a Bill of Rights when you have a power of attorney with general powers, or a constitution with general powers. When you're delegating, I'm going to say it again, general powers. But when you delegate very specified and limited powers, in other words, you can't imply powers, you know, be a part of that, like the implication of a bank. No, there's no mention of a bank. There was no even talk that the federal government would create a bank. As a matter of fact, going through the ratification base, because I went through every single one, I believe the word bank was only brought up twice. And it wasn't in reference to the federal government creating a bank. So it was never even presumed that it was implied. There was no threat of them ever thinking that they could do it because it wasn't within the powers. And it was Hamilton that said, oh, well, it's kind of implied. No, it wasn't. Here he's using estate law just like a power of attorney. You're giving somebody very specific powers to divvy up your estate, and this is how it will be done. It's an estate law or a will and testament is a blank. Basically, it's a power of attorney that either goes to the executor or goes to the state, right? Somebody gets that power of attorney, and it gives them a complete map of how your estate will be divvied up and broken up and what have you. And that's it. There's no, since I'm listed on there, I get everything. You can't do it. It's not allowed. This is a very fixed paradigm. We've lost this sight. As long as we believe they have general powers, they're going to exercise general powers. Your state legislature believes they have general powers. They don't. And sadly, they don't understand their constitution either. Some of them are getting there. But those who are trying to create laws that are, you know, not even within their powers, obviously they haven't gotten it yet. We, the people, need to understand what a power of attorney is and the difference between a general power of attorney and a limited and defined, specified power of attorney. Okay, so I'm out of the rat hole because, folks, the reason I don't want to be in the rat hole and explaining these things that much, so Tammy's going to keep on reading. She may pause and say, does GR want to interrupt here? Like she did. And then so my bad. I apologize. I didn't realize I was on mute. So I'm going to go, and the next time I probably will say something is when they're creating a really good case like this, and I know it's coming up with Mr. Iredell. Mr. Iredell actually uses the term power of attorney, so you can count on me saying something about that. And I've just proven to you folks that these men understood this. And they clearly explained this and these principles in the ratification debates. Therefore, the ratification debates have clarified and helped set the parameters and even clarity, even provided stipulations regarding the clauses in the Constitution. So anyway, all right. What's the term? I surrendered. Go ahead. I yield.
Okay. All right. This clause specifies that they shall make laws to carry into execution all the powers vested by this Constitution. Consequently, they can make no laws to execute any other power. This clause gives no new power, but declares that those already given are to be executed by proper laws. I hope this will satisfy gentlemen. Then we keep going. This is Governor Johnston, the Jurisdiction Bill of Rights.
Absolutely. So Governor Johnston now steps in, and he basically continues the conversation regarding this and this exclusive jurisdiction and so forth. So, yeah. The whole point is to try to just kind of read this and read along to get through this because, we've got the Whiskey Rebellion to cover. Before we get to the Constitution Day, we've got a lot of little things. So, and because we've kind of lost some regular ratification content days, they're just trying to make up. But anyway, folks, I'm not trying to make this boring, but we need to get through this because these are really critical comments. I mean, had we not covered that estate law, that wouldn't have helped you. Wow, that gives me a different paradigm. Wow, that's, I get it. Let's keep going. Thank you so much.
All right. Mr. Chairman, the learned member from Anson says that the federal courts have exclusive jurisdiction of all cases in law and equity arising under the Constitution and laws of the United States. The opinion which I have always entertained is that they will, in these cases, as well as in several others, have concurrent jurisdiction with the state courts and not exclusive jurisdiction. I see nothing in this Constitution which hinders a man from bringing suit wherever he thinks he can have justice done him. The jurisdiction of these courts is established for some purposes with which the state courts have nothing to do, and the Constitution takes no power from the state courts which they now have. They will have the same business which they have now, and if so, they will have enough to employ their time. We know that the gentlemen who preside in our superior courts have more business than they can determine. Their complicated jurisdiction and the great extent of country occasions them a vast deal of business. The addition of the business of the United States would be no manner of advantage to them. It is obvious to every one that there ought to be one Supreme Court for national purposes. But the gentleman says that a Bill of Rights was necessary. It appears to me, sir, that it would have been the highest absurdity to undertake to define what rights the people of the United States were entitled to, for that would be as much as to say they were entitled to nothing else. A Bill of Rights may be necessary in a monarchical government whose powers are undefined. Were we in the situation of a monarchical country? That's a question. No, sir. Every right could not be enumerated, and the omitted rights would be sacrificed if security arose from an enumeration. The Congress cannot assume any other powers than those expressly given them without a palpable violation of the Constitution. That's red. You want me to pause?
No, you can keep going. Keep going.
Okay.
I mean, such palpable. So palpable means blatant, by the way. Some people don't know that. But
yeah.
Without a blatant violation of the Constitution. Go ahead.
Yeah. Such objections as this, I hope, will have no effect on the minds of any members in this House. When gentlemen object generally that it tends to consolidate the states and destroy their state judiciaries, they ought to be explicit and explain their meaning. They make use of contradictory arguments. The Senate represents the states and can alone prevent this dreaded consolidation, yet the powers of the Senate are objected to. The rights of the people, in my opinion, cannot be affected by the federal courts. I do not know how inferior courts will be regulated. Some suppose the state courts will have this business. Others have imagined that the continent would be divided into a number of districts where courts would be held so as to suit the convenience of the people. Whether this or some other mode will be appointed by Congress, I know not, but this I am sure of, that the state judiciaries are not divested of their present judicial cognizance, and that we have every security that our ease and convenience will be consulted. Unless Congress had this power, their laws could not be carried into execution.
Okay, Mr. Bloodworth now is going to kind of carry this on. Yep.
All right. Mr. Chairman, the worthy gentleman up last has given me information on the subject which I had never heard before. Hearing so many opinions, I did not know which was right. The honorable gentleman has said that the state courts and the courts of the United States would have concurrent jurisdiction. I beg the committee to reflect what would be the consequence of such measures. It has ever been considered that the trial by jury was one of the greatest rights of the people. I ask whether, if such causes go into the federal court, the trial by jury is not cut off, and whether there is any security that we shall have justice done us. I ask if there be any security that we shall have juries in civil causes. In criminal cases, there are to be juries, but there is no provision made for having civil causes tried by jury. This concurrent jurisdiction is inconsistent with the security of that great right. If it be not, I would wish to hear how it is secured. I have listened with attention to what the learned gentlemen have said, and have endeavored to see whether their arguments had any weight, but I found none in them. Many words have been spoken and long time taken up, but with me they have gone in at one ear and out the other. It would have given me much pleasure to hear that the trial by jury was secured.
Okay, so I'm going to just jump in really quick on this. He exposes, because I tell you folks, the sacredness of the trial by jury and the power in the people, right? We say this all the time. This is why in common law, it preserved, when it comes to criminal crimes, when a person is about to lose life, liberty, or property, that they have due process in front of a trial by jury. Now, he's obviously an anti-federalist, so I need to kind of indicate this with his name. But as we kind of look at what he's really saying, he's kind of highlighting these things that are, like I said, I refer to them as sacred. The trial by jury is sacred. He's pointing out that, the federal government's going to have these criminal laws. Well, hold on here. They only have enumerated two crimes, treason and counterfeiting. So the question is, will they require a trial by jury, or would they require a magistrate to determine that particular crime? I mean, and because they have full control over the crime and punishment. In other words, they can make it so costly that you just, because what is treason? Hanging. I mean, you get caught in treason, you're going to be hanged. You're dead. Anyway, we'll be right back after this break.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so now that we have the next break, now Mr. J. Dowell, will talk about trial by jury, and he's an anti-federalist as well, by the way, but go ahead.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, the objections to this part of the Constitution have not been answered to my satisfaction yet. We know that the trial by a jury of the vicinage is one of the greatest securities for property. If causes are to be decided at such great distance, the poor will be oppressed. In land affairs particularly, the wealthy suitor will prevail. A poor man who has a just claim on a piece of land has not substance to stand it. Can it be supposed that any man of common circumstances can stand the expense and trouble of going from Georgia to Philadelphia, there to have a suit tried? And can it be justly determined without the benefit of a trial by jury? These are things which have justly alarmed the people. What made the people revolt from Great Britain? The trial by jury, that great safeguard of liberty, was taken away, and a stamp duty was laid upon them. This alarmed them and led them to fear that greater oppressions would take place. We then resisted. It involved us in a war and caused us to relinquish a government which made us happy in everything else. The war was very bloody, but we got our independence. We are now giving away our dear bought rights. We ought to consider what we are about to do before we determine.
Yep, keep going. Mr. Spade, who's actually a Federalist. Yep, and then we got a little red there. Mm-hmm. But he's going to talk about trial by jury, too, and for all intents and purposes, we kind of cover this. I want to just highlight these new paradigms that they point out. And Mr. Iredell, who's coming up, he will actually provide some interesting paradigms. So there we go.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, the trial by jury was not forgotten in the convention. The subject took up a considerable time to investigate it. It was impossible to make any one uniform regulation for all the states, or that would include all cases where it would be necessary. It was impossible by one expression to embrace the whole. There are a number of equity and maritime cases in some of the states in which jury trials are not used. Had the convention said that all causes should be tried by a jury, equity and maritime cases would have been included. It was therefore left to the legislature to say in what cases it should be used, and as the trial by jury is in full force in the state courts, we have the fullest security. And then Mr. Iredell continues, Mr. Chairman, I have waited a considerable time in hopes that some other gentleman would fully discuss this point. I conceive it to be my duty to speak on every subject whereon I think I can throw any light, and it appears to me that some things ought to be said which no gentleman has yet mentioned. The gentleman from New Hanover said that our arguments went in one ear and out the other. This sort of language on so solemn and important an occasion gives me pain. Mr. Bloodworth here declared that he did not mean to convey any disrespect idea by such an expression, that he did not mean an absolute neglect of their arguments, but that they were not sufficient to convince him that he should be sorry to give pain to any gentleman that he had listened, and still would listen, with attention to what would be said. Mr. Iredale then continued.
Okay. Isn't that interesting how what Mr. Iredale said, the general from New Hanover said that our arguments went in one ear and out the other. This sort of language on so solemn and important an occasion gives me pain. So, in other words, it was almost like an insult. He was taking an insult, and instantly, Mr. Bloodworth stood, I didn't mean any insult, but I'm just showing you the civility that prevailed among these men, among the society. I mean, they didn't want to go into duels. They understood that they needed to always maintain an even temper, that they needed to have, they need to persist with respect to the individual. Every individual deserves respect, right? Regardless of their, you don't have to, you don't have to agree with them or anything else, but we shouldn't be, and I know that there are people I myself don't necessarily respect, like Biden. He's adult. And I say that, but when you're in public office, then that type of speech is no longer, disrespectful. That's what happens when you step into that. And so, am I hypocritical? And I'm just trying to point out the level of civility that they had back then. It's alarming to me to see how we had literally strayed and went away from that. But anyway, I just wanted to point this out, because 9 times out of 10, I mentioned these before. This is the first time it's actually documented, so you actually see how somebody, I didn't mean any offense. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I got to get back there. I am by no means surprised at the anxiety which is expressed by gentlemen on this subject. Of all trials that ever were instituted in the world, this, in my opinion, is the best and that which I hope will continue the longest. If the gentleman who composed the convention had designedly omitted it, no man would be more ready to condemn their conduct than myself. But I have been told that the omission of it arose from the difficulty of establishing one uniform, unexceptionable mode. Mode of trial being different in many particulars in several states.
I'm sorry for interrupting. This is another really key thought that I completely missed, and I need to highlight this, where he says, but I have been told the omission of this is the difficulty of establishing one uniform, acceptable mode, that this mode of trial being different in many particulars in the several states. In other words, here is another mention that is clearly identifying that the reason why they did not go down the path of creating common law, or I should say establishing common law, and very specific procedures like trials by jury and so forth, was out of the difficulty of meeting all the state's requirements. That the federal government was not to establish standards upon the states. The federal government was to adjust itself to meet the standards of the states. That's why. Now, I think, I'm going to write this down. As a matter of fact, let me get a pen and paper. I believe that is something that absolutely needs to be clarified. They stated it several times throughout the ratification base, because I pointed this out. As they pointed out, Massachusetts, Virginia, and North Carolina. And I think even in Pennsylvania, in a roundabout way, it came up as well. The point is this, that I honestly think that the Constitution needed to be clarified, and I believe that that's an amendment to Article 3 of the Constitution, that the court is to adjust itself to the legal standards and processes of the states. Because that's why it was designed, not to actually dictate. It was to respect how the states evolved in their legal system, because they were their own legal system. The Constitution and the legal system of the Constitution was very fixed on the Constitution. All things arising under this Constitution. Marriage isn't in the Constitution. Life, all these things that aren't in the labor, housing, environment. We can go on and on and on. If it's not there, then they and that legal system has no jurisdiction. And this actually helps everybody understand mm-hmm. this. Because now you can see that the courts were designed to basically adapt itself to the legal system of the state, not to dictate one. Okay?
Right.
All right. And unfortunately, they didn't say these things back then. They basically were just explaining it, but I think it's necessary because somebody needs to state the obvious. And, you know, sometimes that's my job. Hey, what are you guys doing? Playing cards? You got to state the obvious, right? Anyway, mm-hmm. there you go. Go ahead.
Gentlemen will be pleased to consider that there is a material difference between an article fixed in the Constitution and a regulation by law. An article in the Constitution, however inconvenient and may prove by experience, can only be altered by altering the Constitution itself, which manifestly is a thing that ought not to be done often. When regulated by law, it can easily be occasionally altered so as best to suit the conveniences of the people. Had there been an article in the Constitution taking away that trial, it would justly have excited the public indignation. It is not taken away by the Constitution. Though that does not provide expressly for a trial by jury in civil cases, it does not say that there shall not be such a trial. The reasons of the omission have been mentioned by a member of the late General Convention, Mr. Speight. There are different practices in regard to this trial in different states. In some cases, they have no juries in admiralty and equity cases. In others, they have juries in these cases, as well as in suits at common law. I beg leave to say that if any gentleman of ability and knowledge of the subject will only endeavor to fix upon any one rule that would be pleasing to all the states under the impression of their present different habits, he will be convinced that it is impracticable. If the practice of any particular state had been adopted, others probably would practice, whose practice had been different, would have been discontented. This is a consequence that naturally would have ensued had the provision been made in the Constitution itself. But when the regulation is to be by law, as that law, when found injudicious, can be easily repealed, a majority may be expected to agree upon some method, since some method or other must be first tried, and there is a greater chance of the favorite method of one state being in time preferred. It is not to be presumed that the Congress would dare to deprive the people of this valuable privilege. Their own interests will operate as an additional guard, as none of them could tell how soon they might have occasion for such a trial themselves. The greatest danger from ambition is in criminal cases, but here they have no option. The trial must be by jury, and the state wherein the offense is committed, and the right of habeas corpus will in the meantime secure the citizen against arbitrary imprisonment, which has been the principal source of tyranny in all ages. Do you want me to keep going?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. As to the clause respecting cases arising under the Constitution and the laws of the Union, which the honorable member objected to, it must be observed that laws are useless unless they are executed. At present, Congress have powers which they cannot execute. After making laws which affect the dearest interest of the people in the constitutional mode, they have no way of enforcing them. The situation of those gentlemen who have lately served in Congress must have been very disagreeable. Congress have power to enter into negotiations with foreign nations, but cannot compel the observance of treaties that they make. They have been much distressed by their inability to pay the pressing demands of the public creditors. They have been reduced so low as to borrow principal to pay interest. Such are the unfortunate consequences of this unhappy situation. These are the effects of the pernicious mode of requisitions. Has any state fully paid its quota? I believe not, sir. Yet I am far from thinking that this has been owing altogether to an unwillingness to pay the debts. It may have been in some instances the case, but I believe not in all. Our state legislature has no way of raising any considerable sums but by laying direct taxes. Other states have imports of consequence. These may afford them a considerable relief, but our state, perhaps, could not have raised its full quota by direct taxes without imposing burdens too heavy for the people to bear. Suppose in this situation, Congress had proceeded to enforce their requisitions by sending an army to collect them. What would have been the consequence? Civil war, in which the innocent must have suffered with the guilty. Those who were willing to pay would have been equally distressed with those who were unwilling. Requisitions thus having failed of their purpose, it is proposed by this Constitution that instead of collecting taxes by the sword, application shall be made by the government to the individual citizens. If any individual disobeyed, the courts of justice can give immediate relief. This is the only natural and effectual method of enforcing laws. As to the danger of concurrent jurisdictions, has any inconvenience resulted from the concurrent jurisdictions in sundry cases of the superior and county courts of this state? The inconvenience of attending at a great distance, which has been so much objected to, is one which would be so general that there is no doubt but that a majority would always feel themselves and their constituents personally interested in preventing it. I have no doubt, therefore, that proper care will be taken to lessen this evil as much as possible, and in particular, that an appeal to the Supreme Court will not be allowed but in cases of great importance, where the object may be adequate to the expense. The Supreme Court may possibly be directed to sit alternately in different parts of the Union.
So the appeal to the Supreme Court is going to be limited on only those things that arise under the Constitution. Therefore,
right,
if it's a crime, such as murder, such as, you know, some heinous crime, rape, you know, murder, you know, those types of things, then that's not a federal jurisdiction. Every state will have to, you know, police themselves. That's their job, and that's left to the states to do. The concept,
right,
and because the way he kind of, unlike Madison, Madison came out and said, I don't believe 99% of these cases you're thinking are crimes are within their jurisdiction. They won't have the authority to be involved in it. It won't go there. And you would think that the states would be very jealous and very guarded about just allowing this open swinging door, this revolving, you know, door for the court system to just suck everything in. They would say, no, you have no jurisdiction over kidnapping. That's never been put into the Constitution. Folks, drugs, the same thing. What they've done is they've made it easy because they just took it over. They did it unconstitutionally. Therefore, the states actually have to say, you know, we're going to keep these laws that they created, but they have no jurisdiction over it anymore. Period. You know, do you know how much money the federal government has confiscated through drug raids and so forth, when technically that should be going to your state?
Yeah.
Okay. There you go. You know, when they actually seize a ship, like the states that are on the coast, and there's a big ship that's got a bunch of drugs or a bunch of people, and they seize that ship, guess what? That becomes a state asset. Not federal.
Yeah, it's true, yeah.
So, that's only if the Constitution of the state allows the seizure of property, you know, within its jurisdiction. And as a matter of fact, the states should actually assume concurrent jurisdiction from the shoreline out to the federal coast. The problem is the federal government says, no, you don't. We have exclusive jurisdiction. No, they don't. They only have exclusive jurisdiction over those things enumerated, like war, that type of stuff. When it comes to crimes and committing bad things, the states should actually have the full jurisdiction. So, in other words, if a federal ship, the Coast Guard, stops and arrests and basically says, hey, you know, we're seizing this ship. They are doing that in lieu of the state. They can do that in lieu of the state, but they can't do it so they can make money off of it. Again, I'm just going to say this. The federal government is not designed to make any money. They're to tax us on the legitimate things that they need to do to perform for us. That's it. Not to have this bank.
Right.
Which is why I'm getting into the Species Act of 1936. Now let's dive into, we got 7 minutes, and we've got another one under Mr. Iredell, the Bill of Rights and Enumerated Powers. This is where, and it's in black, but this is where you're going to read this. I'm actually making it red for us now. And so this is where he actually dives into this concept of a power of attorney. So, there you go. I'm just preparing you that when we're done with this, and actually we only got 7 minutes, so we'll get probably into this and see where we go. Okay? I'll try to interrupt you if you're still reading. Thanks.
Okay. With regard to a Bill of Rights, this is a notion originating in England where no written constitution is to be found and the authority of their government is derived from the most remote antiquity. Magna Carta itself is no constitution but a solemn entrustment ascertaining certain rights of individuals by the legislature for the time being and every article of which the legislature may at any time alter. This, and a Bill of Rights also, the invention of later times, were occasioned by great usurpations of the crown, contrary as was conceived to the principles of their government, about which there was a variety of opinions. But neither that instrument nor any other instrument ever attempted to abridge the authority of Parliament, which is supposed to be without any limitation whatever. Had their constitution been fixed and certain, a Bill of Rights would have been useless, for the constitution would have shown plainly the extent of that authority which they were disputing about. Of what use, therefore, can a Bill of Rights be in this Constitution, where the people expressly declare how much power they do give, and consequently retain all they do not? It is a declaration of particular powers by the people to the representatives for particular purposes. It may be considered as a great power of attorney, under which no power can be exercised but what is expressly given. Did any man ever hear before that at the end of a power of attorney it was said that the attorney should not exercise more power than was there given to him? That's a good point. Suppose, for instance, a man had lands in the counties of Anson and Caswell, and he should give another a power of attorney to sell his lands in Anson. Would the other have any authority to sell the lands in Caswell? Or could he without absurdity say, 'Tis true, you have not expressly authorized me to sell the lands in Caswell, but as you had lands there, and did not say I should not, I thought I might as well sell those lands as the other. A Bill of Rights, as I conceive, would not only be incongruous, but dangerous. No man, let his ingenuity be what it will, could enumerate all the individual rights not relinquished by this Constitution. Suppose, therefore, an enumeration of great many, but an omission of some, and that long after all traces of our present disputes were at an end, any of the omitted rights should be invaded, and the invasion be complained of. What would be the plausible answer of the government to such a complaint? Would they not naturally say, we live at a great distance from the time when this Constitution was established. We can judge of it much better by the ideas of it entertained at the time than by any ideas of our own. The Bill of Rights passed at that time showed that the people did not think every power retained which was not given else this Bill of Rights was not only useless but absurd.
Okay, so at that point, let me basically reject this call because we got a few minutes here. And what I want to do is, tomorrow we're going to reread this in black that I made red. And that's because we want to kind of dive into really what he's saying. But as he kind of talks at the very end of this, he starts talking about how absurd it is to try to create an argument for a Bill of Rights with enumerations. Now, right, wrong, or indifferent, Madison felt that we needed to create a Bill of Rights. Not because that was, you know, the Constitution really wasn't enumerated. And as a matter of fact, we go through this when we read the Constitution every time. And I go through this many times when I actually start talking about the Bill of Rights, because at the very beginning of the Bill of Rights is a preamble. And this is what Madison put before the Bill of Rights. The conventions of a number of states having at the time of their adopting the Constitution expressed a desire, in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers, that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added, which means that these added clauses basically means that they made no law respecting these things, none. They can't abridge these things. They actually went into the controversies of common law. When a controversy is greater than $20, the trial by jury shall be preserved. Well, that means that the trial by jury, based on that, is $20. And even though the value of $20 back then is a lot different than it is today, it's still $20, and that's what we have to go with. And until we amend that, because that's what happens when you put a dollar figure there. Does that make sense? Because $20 was probably a half a year's wages back in the 1700s. Yeah. Now, today, you know, $20 is not even what you put in your tank of gas. But the fact that they actually put it in there to the letter, that's what we go by, period, whether the courts like it or not. If you want to change that number, then you would have said, whatever is deemed by Congress, that Congress shall set the value of controversy, right? But no, they've said, no, we don't want that. We don't want to empower them to make arbitrary numbers or to play with it. So they fixed it to 20. You want to change it, you have to refix it. You have to amend it by refixing it to a different figure. Do not give them latitude. They didn't trust them. They didn't trust themselves. So why should we trust ourselves now when we're even worse? So as we look at what he's saying here, this is so powerful. As a matter of fact, this is why, next to Madison and George Nicholas, the three superstars that really did an awesome job in clarifying precisely what the Constitution meant, is Iredell, Madison, and Nicholas. Those are the top three, in my eyes. And so, I mean, there were really good jobs done by a lot of them, but the way they hit very specific core issues is just, anyway. So as we're looking at this, and we just ran out of time, as we're looking at this, we'll dive back into this even a little bit more tomorrow, because it's just that important. So anyway, folks, I'm hoping, because it's actually right here in writing, it may be considered, the Constitution may be considered as a great power of attorney under which no power can be exercised but what is expressly given. That simple? I mean, he said right there. Anyway, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic review. Please read my argument for Republic review, as well as my description of the Republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.